I'd like to call the meeting to order. Actually, I was going to make this the official 1,930th meeting of this committee that I've chaired, but it's not official business, so I will defer that to the opening, the grand opening, really, on two weeks from Wednesday. So, we're not going to go to the bottom of a roll call, I don't believe. And we don't have any minutes to approve that I know of, so we'll skip that one. The first bill that we're going to be considering today, and you all know that this is nothing official. We're just going to holler and scream at each other about all the particulars of each bill, and then move on to voting on the 25th, whenever our first meeting is.
26,
okay. And Representative Swatsky of Wilmer fame is first up with House File 1949. Welcome to the committee. Now that they found you wherever you were.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was in my office. We were talking to some EMTs and having to get a little business done with their certifications. So thank you for waiting, and I apologize for being tardy. It's not what a good school teacher does. House File 1949 is an issue that was brought to me at the county fair this past summer, and having a concern with using cellular phones in work zones. And as the motorist, as you and I would be going through a work zone, not for the work site construction people doing their daily duties. This would create a safer construction zone as well as a safer atmosphere for the driver. When motorists see construction signs and or orange barrels, they need to slow down, put their phone down, and keep their eyes on the road. And according to a new highway work zone study conducted by the Associated General Contractor of America, 68% of the nation's highway and contractors had motor vehicle crashes in their construction work zones during this past year. 28% of the contractors report that their workers were injured during work zone crashes, and 18% had at least one worker killed. And the association officials said that 75% of the contractors nationwide feel that tougher laws, fines, and legal penalties for moving violations in work zones would reduce injuries and fatalities. And I understand that this is part of something that you have brought forward as well, but thank you for the consideration of allowing me.
Representative Swatsky, we have that in a more comprehensive bill, but you're the one that advanced the single bill, so we thought we'd hear yours, and I don't even know if they're exactly the same. But in any event, thank you. Do you have any, are there any testifiers for or against the House File 1949?
Yes, I do believe so.
Identify yourself for, I think we have a tape already, even though we're not official, so.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Tim Warkey. I'm the Highway and Transportation Division Director for the Minnesota Chapter of the Associated General Contractors. We're a construction trade association made up of highway heavy contractors and commercial building contractors. You're going to hear more from me later on this afternoon with regard to the second proposal on the agenda, but I wanted to step up and say some comments in support of Representative Swatsky's bill before you. Distracted driving and how it relates to construction work zones is a very serious and growing concern in the highway construction industry. And you heard Representative Swatsky cite a study that our national chapter conducted of all the states, some pretty astounding statistics about accidents and work zones and fatalities as well. And unfortunately, you're going to hear in subsequent testimony how that tragedy and loss of life has visited a company in Minnesota and two families in particular. But as it relates to mobile phone use in construction work zones, our belief strongly in understanding is that when a motorist enters a highway work zone, you are entering a altered or changed physical driving environment. Either you have a crossover or a lane restriction or a slowing of traffic requires your 100% attention on what's happening on the roadway. And I think everyone would agree that even the use of hands-free cell phone use or conversation on a mobile device is not 100% engaged in the activity of driving. And I'm going to bring forward later today some safety professionals from some of our member firms, and they're going to be able to share with you some of their observations where they have seen and observed distracted driving, speeding, other unsafe conditions in those work zones. So we're very concerned about that. We want to thank Representative Sawatsky for bringing this forward. It happened sort of coincident with a larger group that I was pulling together during the interim, and which the similar feature will be part of Representative Earhart's presentation later on the agenda. I don't know if it's worth pointing out, and I haven't, I guess I didn't look closely at Representative Sawatsky's bill, but I know in Representative Earhart's lead all later, we're talking about the restriction applying when workers are present. I think there needs to be some element of practicality of how this would be administered effectively or efficiently. When there are no workers present in the work zone and the work zone has been buttoned up, so to speak, and for the evening or made safe, a full and total ban might not be practical. But those are things I think as we move forward with this discussion that could be brought into consideration, including the type of work zone, and as I said, if and when workers are present. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Anybody else, Representative Swartzky? Representative Hornsey.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Rookie, I'm so glad that, well, I strongly support this, first of all, and I hope we move this out of the committee this session. But I'm so glad that you mentioned that issue of hands-free because, you know, all the studies, or many of the studies that I've seen, indicate that this is just as much of a problem as, you know, talking on the cell phone directly. And so I think there's a lot of mythology about this, that somehow it's safer. And the studies also show that this is the equivalent of driving drunk. When you're on a cell phone and you're driving, you're at 0.08, effectively. So we should ban this in work zones. I know that Representative Mason at one time and myself and others have talked about, you know, not having any kind of cell phone talking while driving, and I think that's a ways away, unfortunately. We don't have the support for that, but I really hope that we have the support for this bill, and I hope eventually we come to our senses and realize that we ought to not be talking on cell phones, texting, hands-free. All of that is a problem. All of that is unsafe. And we need to send a message about safety, and this bill starts to do that. So thank you for raising that issue about hands-free. It is not safer. No one should be under the illusion that it is.
Thank you, Representative Hornsey. Anybody else? Anybody that would like to testify for or against this? At this time, I think we can defer the folks that you have testify until we get to the 1949 bill. Unless there are someone that specifically wants to speak for or against this particular item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Edward Reynoso. I'm the political director for Teamsters Joint Council 32. We represent numerous members within the highway heavy industry, and I just want to be on record to let you know that we are 100% supportive of this piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. That it? Well, we will, I don't know what we're going to do. We're not laying this over. we're going to start all over the next meeting we have that's official. So this is all informational, and Ornstein didn't know about this stuff, so we wanted to bring him up to date on it. So. Oh, hi. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll go up to the front, I guess. Is that easier? Okay. You can sit here.
Representative Earhart, when you're ready to present the bill.
Thank you. This is on House File 1949. There's been a delete all since the bill was introduced, and that delete all is some number here that I have.
Can I interrupt 1 minute? The House file, I'm sorry, is 1796.
Oh, excuse me. I was looking at Representative Slosky's bill. House File 1796 is the correct. I was looking for the delete all as well, which must be here somewhere. H1796DE1 is the delete all, so you have that in your packet somewhere. Basically, what we're looking at here is we want you all to remember this phrase, orange cones, no phones. So I'll start out with that. Orange cones, no phones. And there's been a number of fatalities over the years of workers in construction workers that have been injured or killed in work zones. And in 2012, the Egan Company had two workers killed as a result of careless driving in a work zone. And not too long after that, an ad hoc committee was put together to address work zone safety. Associated General Contractors, the unions, the State Patrol, MnDOT, and others met a number of times over this past summer to work through some of the things that we're going to be talking about here. Not all are in agreement totally with what we are doing, but that at the moment is up for to see who wins the battle and who prevails in this bill, if anybody. There is a flat rate proposed in this bill for fines, either for speeding or flagger violations. You all know what flaggers are. Those are the guys that stand at the beginning and beginning of both lanes of traffic when there's one zone. And what I've been told is that often people will violate their call to stop. So what we're talking about applies to a basic, instead of doubling your fee in a work zone, a flat $375. That would go into a new work zone safety account in the general fund and would be used for further safety implementation. It also prohibits cell phone use in work zones when workers are present, and that's what we were just looking at. I don't know if that was present or not in your bill, but we think that it should apply only when workers are present. And three, authorize a pilot program for automated speed enforcement in five work zones where the state patrol could issue citations, and that's during the years of 14 and 15, if I remember correctly. So again, it's orange cones, no phones is part of the, and I noticed that Representative Swatsky hadn't picked up on that slogan yet, but.
I saved it for you.
So we have some testifiers, and I'm not sure in what order you would like to, so if you would go ahead and identify yourself for the tape and.
Good afternoon. My name is Jody Rakuski. I am the widow of the late Ron Rakuski, who was hit and killed by a distracted driver on I-35W in Burnsville on October 13, 2011, while working on a MnDOT project. My husband Ron was a very good-hearted and loving husband who sacrificed commuting long hours from our home in St. Joseph in order to be a good provider for our family, which includes our two sons, ages 8 and 10. He was a dedicated Egan employee and was proud of his technical electrician skills as an outdoor Egan foreman. Ron loved people, loved his family and coworkers, and was always the first one to volunteer his time and skills to help others without expecting anything in return. He was truly a remarkable husband, father, and worker who had a strong determination to create a better life for his family and worked long and hard to do just that. As a husband and wife, Ron and I were a complete team and equal partners. We set goals for our family and our sons and sacrificed to make sure that they would have enough put away to ensure proper care for our boys, both of whom have autism spectrum disorder. The impact of losing my husband, my confidant and best friend, and the father of my two boys is something I cannot adequately describe. On Thursday, October 13, 2011, Ron left for work that morning with every intention of returning home that evening as usual. At 12:30 p.m. that afternoon, our lives were forever changed when I received a call asking me to make the long drive to Hennepin County Medical Center, where Ron had been rushed from Burnsville, and the trip from St. Joe took forever. I would never wish upon anyone else the trauma of not knowing what I would see when I got to HCMC and the thoughts that ran through my head during that drive. When I got there and walked into the waiting room, I saw my sister and Egan staff there and was told Ron had already died. I felt as if I was having an out-of-body experience, and that time stood still. My first lucid thought was wondering, how was I going to explain to my boys Daddy was not going to ever come back home again? My son's daddy has not been there to celebrate birthdays, first communions, Father's Day, holidays, or any other of the countless milestones that have passed during the last 2.5 years. The boys still do not understand that we as a family must continue business of living even when there is no dad coming home each day. The passage of time on a calendar has done nothing to fill the emptiness in our hearts and the endless loneliness. Our hearts ache forever for Ron, no matter how life changes or moves on. As a widow with young children with autism, my days can be very stressful. Kids are work regardless, but with children with autism, they need to attend a variety of different therapies, IEP meetings, psychologist appointments, and paperwork, as it's a lifelong disorder. Their ability to adapt to change can be very difficult, and language and social skills are delayed, if any, which makes it a very constant struggle. With that being said, I do my best to express how much I love them, and we will get through this somehow. It breaks my heart in two when I see my boys walking around wearing their daddy's Egan shirts so they can be close to him. I work full-time, and I try to make good choices when it comes to my boys, but decisions that were once shared are now left up to only me. There's nothing that I wouldn't do for my boys. They are truly my life and my gift from Ron. This bill is extremely important to our family. Distracted driving is so common these days, and it seems to happen all around us. Anyone who has lost a loved one through a tragedy such as ours knows that a split-second quick glance, looking away while driving or grabbing a cell phone to dial a call, or even looking in the rearview mirror, can be disastrous, long-term effects. I believe, unless one is affected personally, no one truly understands how such an insignificant action can change not only the life of one individual, but the rest of the family and friends that are left behind. We need to make sure that people slow down, stop driving with distractions, respect workers doing their jobs on the road, and that this law is enforced, and that drivers are penalized when they do not follow the law. There needs to be consequences for actions in order to protect the public good. Thank you for your time to share my story.
Thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you.
Do you want to take the next testifier as well before we take questions?
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Deb Carlson. I am the widow of Craig Carlson, who also died on 35W in Burnsville on October 13, 2011. Craig worked for the Egan Company as a project manager in the outdoor electrical division. He had been there for many years, and his job was to primarily bid on major outdoor transportation projects and direct Egan staff in the field on installations and troubleshooting. On the day Craig died, he wasn't planning on being out in the field. He was at his desk when Ron Rakuski, the field supervisor on the 35W project, called and said he had an issue with some cable. Craig left the office that day on his lunch hour, planning to be back at his desk to do paperwork shortly, only he never came back. From the accident details provided to our family, State Patrol, Craig died instantly upon impact. With a car that was traveling 70 miles per hour. Unlike Ron Rakuski, my husband's coworker, who was critically injured in the field and later passed away at the hospital, Craig probably didn't know what hit him on that day because he had no time for a warning and no time to get out of the way. But he had often talked about what it was like to work on the side of the busy road prior to the accident. One of the things he told our two kids and me frequently was that the only warning he and others in the field would sometimes get would be the screeching of brakes. He said that when he heard that noise, he would just try and jump elsewhere, not knowing for sure where he needed to go, but knowing that he had to move no matter what. I am pretty certain that any worker on the road or a State Patrol member would likely say the same thing when describing what it must be like to be trying to focus on doing your job, yet having to listen carefully for any kind of warning sign that you were in danger while doing your work. Craig left behind our two children, both teenagers, a devoted mother, brothers and a sister, co-workers who admired him and considered him a leader in his work, and me. It's been 2 years and almost exactly 4 months to the day that Craig didn't come back to work or home that night, and our lives have been forever changed. My kids are growing up without their father. I am managing and handling things that I never thought I would have to do, and learning how to live, adjust, and move forward without my life partner. It has been a difficult transition. My hope is that this committee will understand what is at stake for road workers each time they step out on the road or highway to fix a pothole, change a light bulb, pave a road, or untangle an electrical cable. There is no place to hide. There is not adequate protection to keep them safe, and there are drivers who are becoming increasingly immune to the sight of workers on the road because they are too distracted or preoccupied with other things, including talking on their cell phones. They don't slow down because they know they can go at least 9 miles over the posted speed limits, even in work zones, before getting a ticket. They plow through orange cones and barrels, and they don't believe there are any problems. This legislation is a beginning, but not an end, to what needs to be done for Minnesota road workers. We need to start by reducing speed limits every time a worker is on the road, not just here and there, as is the case today. And these speed limits should be lower than 55 miles per hour in order to give workers a chance to get out of the way a second or two earlier when they hear brakes squealing near them. We need to enforce speed limits in work zones and write tickets that hit the pocketbooks of those who break the law so they stop doing what they do now when they pass the state patrol vehicle sitting in one spot near the beginning of a work zone that has no intention of writing them tickets. We need to let drivers know that if they speed in a work zone in Minnesota, they will pay a hefty fine and it will be a misdemeanor, and put up signs on the road that remind them of that so they see those signs each day. Finally, we need to understand that keeping road workers in Minnesota safe is just as important as keeping traffic moving. Right now, the focus is not where it should be, and that needs to change. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. That's not an easy task.
Good afternoon. My name is Larry Hansen, and I'm the safety director for Egan Companies, a Minnesota-based electrical mechanical contractor headquartered in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. Egan is in full support of this bill to increase the level of safety for all Minnesota road workers. In October of 2011, we lost two employees, Craig Carlson and Ron Rakowski, as they were working on I-35W in Burnsville, Minnesota. Craig and Ron, along with a third worker, were diagnosing a cable issue off the eastbound shoulder of the roadway just north of County Road 42 at 12:30 p.m. in the afternoon, when an out-of-state driver lost control of his vehicle, crossed three lanes of traffic, and hit Craig and Ron. Our third employee had just gone to the truck a few minutes before and had to witness this horrifying accident. Both of these men left behind a wife and two children. On this day, their lives were changed forever, and they have to adjust to a life without their husband and fathers. The young driver from Missouri was distracted and not paying attention to the road when he lost control of his vehicle that day. He was not issued a speeding ticket, despite the fact that he was traveling at 70 miles per hour when he hit and killed our people. This was because the road speed limit had not been reduced from the normal speed limit of 70 miles per hour, despite the fact that workers were present and actively working on both directions of I-35W at the time. We believe that speed was a factor. Perhaps a reduction in speed limit would have prevented the loss of control, or at least allowed the driver time to recover. In fact, after the death of Ron and Craig, the speed limit on that project was reduced to 55 miles per hour for the duration of the project. As Egan's safety director, I'm responsible for ensuring the safety of our employees. Every year, we provide rigorous safety training and encourage all of our employees to be safe and vigilant while working on the job and using every safety tool available. Our employees are provided recurrent training and programs that meet or exceed the OSHA requirements, MnDOT, and other state agency requirements. Despite of these best efforts, Egan and other contractors can only prepare as best we can for what are difficult road conditions every day across Minnesota. Every work zone on every road is different, and it is particularly difficult to address these with all employees. Despite our best efforts, the double loss of Craig and Ron continue to haunt our entire company. We've set up two memorials for them at the entrance of our corporate headquarters as a reminder of that tragic day. In addition, many of our workers wear memorial hard hat decals and black hard hat bands to keep Craig and Ron in their memory. We have a pickup that nobody wants to drive because it's Ron's truck. We have an office that nobody wants to use because it's Craig's. In addition, there are other tangible impacts on Egan's business because of this horrific accident. First is the financial impact of the large deductible insurance policy. We've also experienced increased insurance costs, along with the effects it has on our safety rating that is used to pre-qualify for bidding future work. These deaths have made a direct impact on our efforts to procure future work. All of that is secondary to the loss of our coworker and friends. Excuse me for getting emotional. It's like reliving that day for all of us. Egan Company supports this legislation and our industry partners' efforts to increase safety for road workers across Minnesota. We are especially concerned that the existing statute in place addressing speed limits in work zones does not require a review of road speed limits in real time prior to making decisions on whether or not to reduce the speed limits. Furthermore, we believe it's critical to reduce existing work zone speed limits anytime a worker is present, and it is very apparent that drivers are not slowing down in designated work zones, and there is not enough enforcement currently of work zone speed limits and distracted driving. These are critical factors that we feel need to be addressed and monitored while any road worker is risking his or her life to improve roads in Minnesota, oftentimes only being separated by a traffic cone and the motoring public. Lowering a work zone speed limit is not that difficult. Increasing the fines for speeding in work zones is necessary and a good first step, but increased enforcement of work zone speed limits and distracted driving is critical to change the behavior of drivers on our roadway. We feel the bill is long overdue and needs to be implemented as soon as possible in order to protect our road workers working on Minnesota highways. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of road workers' safety, and I apologize for the emotion that goes into it.
No apology necessary. I know this was difficult, and thank you very much for sharing with us today. Are there any questions? Any comments from the audience on this? Okay. Then we could move on to the next panel that will be testifying. Again, thank you very much for coming here today. We're ready when you are.
Good afternoon again, Madam Chair, committee members. Again, for the record, my name is Tim Warkey. I represent the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. I'm the Highway Division Director there. Wanted to cover a number of things with you and set up the discussion from this next panel, and then some background as to how the delete all is in front of you today. Let me start and cover a few things. I've added in my remarks. You've heard some prior testimony with regard to the cell phone situation. But, Madam Chair, every spring I'm afforded a solemn honor of representing the highway construction industry at a ceremony that's hosted by our partners at MnDOT that's titled Worker Memorial Day. The ceremony marks the passing of so many men and women, contractor personnel and MnDOT personnel, who have died while performing their jobs in the construction, repair, and maintenance of the state's roadways. It's a humbling and somber experience to stand before empty rows of chairs that are marked with hard hats and orange vests and realize that these spaces represent men and women who are forever lost to their families as husbands and wives, fathers, mothers, etc. The individuals who lost their lives on roadways that you and I travel every day are these folks. For most of us, the ribbon of road is simply a convenient thoroughfare of mobility and freedom to travel between points A to point B. For the men and women of the construction industry, however, that same ribbon of pavement is their everyday workplace. It's their office, if you will. And as you heard in the previous panel, the roadway and construction work zone is a place that can turn tragic and deadly in a moment's notice. And that's the reason why we are here before you today to advocate for this bill. If I could address a few things in the packet. You heard previous testimony with regard to the cell phone ban. There's data in the packet, which I will not go through again, which is from the Associated General Contractors of America, which lists some statistical data points as to the growing number and frequency of accidents in construction zones across the country. I would like to take a minute, and there's also a handout or a packet of information that has the AGC of Minnesota letterhead. It looks like this. It's really there to illustrate for you, and if I could spend a minute telling you how this working group was put together. That letter you see is from our organization last summer to a group of folks, an industry and advocacy group of folks that we were not charged with putting together. We did this of our own accord as an acknowledgement to what we feel is an unsafe, inherently growing unsafe work environment for our members out in the field. And you can see through some of the attachments who those folks were that were part of this work group. And I committed to the group that because of the nature of this session being a short session and because of the fact that we wanted to do some things from the positive side of the legislature that could be accomplished in short order to affect change in safety, that we would only meet a few times. So you can see there the folks that participated. There's some illustrative agendas of the topics that we covered. But basically the group was an informal group of practitioners, administrators, regulatory authorities, safety advocates, labor representatives, local governments, Federal Highway Administration representatives, and contractors. Again, we met 4 to 5 times this past fall. We had focused discussions covering things like the current conditions and safety environment that you see, best practices out, what's happening in the field that's working well and what isn't, speed issues and data collection, the use of technology as a tool, distracted driving we covered at length, enforcement activities including the use of automated enforcement. We discussed flagger issues, we discussed administrative concerns and potential remedies, and then we identified some short and some mid-range and long-term objectives. I would submit that what you have before you in terms of Representative Earhart's delete all amendment are some short-term objectives that we thought were able to be accomplished. And if I could quickly, I'll quickly run through those things, and they may not necessarily be in order of the bill. But basically, one of the main things we picked up on early was that the current fine structure and the current sign legend that says fines double in work zones has lost its effectiveness, it's lost its punch, that the public does not pay attention. Do I know if my fine is $35, $60, $160? I have no idea what my fine is going to be. Therefore, fines double really is of no consequence to me to effectuate a change in my behavior. And I will say, in a point of departure, MnDOT shared some information with us late last week on a survey data that I'll make available to the committee, but they have a community of online users that they survey regularly, and they asked them questions about this issue, and they asked about the sign legend and what would get your most attention, and they were given 4 or 5 different options. And the option that's before you in this bill ended up being the most commonly referenced or the highest scoring option that would effectuate a change behavior. That is a fine that is clearly stated and has a high minimum threshold. And the lowest scoring was the fines double in work zones. So from that evidence, which arguably is limited because it was a group of focused online survey respondents, we feel strongly that what you have before you with this minimum threshold is a way to proceed. Additionally, why $375? We found in our research that the state of Illinois, who is a national leader in work zone safety, has moved to that and has set their minimum fine threshold at $375. They also have an adjunct to their sign that says hit a worker in a construction zone, minimum $10,000 fine, 1 year in jail. We're not advocating that far, but we do think a change in the fine structure needs to occur. And then we tie that fine structure back to a special revenue account at MnDOT that would then capitalize a fund to fund enhanced enforcement by the State Patrol when it's requested, and also to fund a public awareness campaign. There's also a provision dealing with a flagger violation where that fine is raised to be commensurate with violation of the speed limit to both be $375. You heard about the cell phone ban in Representative Earhart's amendment. The difference is that his proposal states when workers are present, and I pointed that out earlier. There's a piece on photo enforcement and a demonstration of photo enforcement. The group had a mixed opinion about photo enforcement, largely because of the nature of how it can how it's dealt with here in the legislature being somewhat controversial and difficult administratively. But lastly, there's a reporting requirement in the bill that would require the department to report back on those fines, how the money, the appropriated money, was used, a record of violations, where those violations occurred, and some recommendations going forward on how to improve work zone safety, and some things that they would recommend to you in an annual report. Madam Chair, that's basically my remarks. I wanted to bring forward for you, for some brief remarks, a panel of folks that will introduce themselves. These folks, starting with our current AGC of Minnesota Board Chairman Chris Dunick, are going to share with you their observations and what they see in work zones in some personal situations that they have witnessed in the recent past. And with that, I will step away and let our panel resume the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck, did you want a question right now?
Thank you, Madam Chair, I would. Mr. Representative Earhart, could we, if we could step back just 1 minute to cover a couple of questions. You know, the fact that there was no fine in this accident, this tragic accident, is just shocking, absolutely shocking. And I guess I'm wondering, did the normal, say, criminal vehicular charges and conviction then occur with this incident? Would that, was that what took place?
Yes, actually, the young man was prosecuted for, and Jody, help me, reckless driving?
Yeah, distracted driving.
Okay. For distracted driving, and he was charged with that
okay.
In the process.
Well, then, Madam Chair and Mr. Hansen, the fact that our current law says that there may be reduced maximum speeds in these work zones, so what circumstances, and who asks for the reduction in speeds, and you know how, and that's going to continue, I guess, under the current bill, as the language is going to remain the exact same. So it seems like it's leaving it wide open to still sort of, sometimes we will and sometimes we won't have a reduced speed.
Yeah, and actually, MnDOT makes that determination if they're going to reduce the speed in a work zone or not. But as far as what was happened in this event, I don't know what that would have been prior to the accident.
Okay, all right. Well, Madam Chair, and I have just one other comment. Maybe at some point someone might just address how this new bill that we're looking at, how that all dovetails, say, with the worker comp, similar situation where someone, a worker, is killed on an accident on the job. Just interested to know the connection. Thank you.
Thank you. Next testifier, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Chris Dunick, and I am a third-generation owner of a family business out in western Minnesota named Dunick Incorporated. Happened to be in Representative Swatsky's district, and so I appreciate the legislation that's being brought forward. It's a very important issue to us. And As I said, I'm a vice president of Dunick Incorporated, responsible for a number of things. I also serve on the executive safety committee within our company, and I also serve on a board on a peer group that is that focuses primarily on risk and safety issues. And so I believe that my interest in work zone safety started when I was very young. As I said, as being a third generation family member, I remember quite clearly the time my father came home and said that we had lost an employee in a work zone. And it was a flag person who it was a young gal who worked for us for a number of years through high school, and she was tragically killed. I believe I was about 10 years old. I don't remember exactly how old, but it had a very profound impact on me because it made me realize just the risk and danger that these employees were placing themselves in every single day. Like I said, our organization is based out of Prinsburg, Minnesota. We have about 250 employees, and we do work in Minnesota, mostly western, southwestern Minnesota, out in North and South Dakota, and also in Iowa. And so we see a lot of different ways of handling traffic and reducing speeds in traffic zones. And we have a lot of experience with that. We primarily are involved in asphalt paving and milling. We also do some bridge construction, underground utility work, and things of that nature. We have a motto at Dunick Incorporated, and it's called "Safety Brings You Home." And this has been a model that has been adopted for a few years because we think that the most important thing about our company is we are responsible for these individuals to get them home every night to their families. It is very important that when a worker comes and works for the whole day, spends his time, earns his money, we want him to go home in as good a condition or better than when he came. And it is the highest point of focus in our organization. Safety is number one for us. What we're seeing in the last few years, especially with the ongoing development of smartphones, is much more distraction. You know, you have people driving down the road. They're not just talking on their telephones. They're looking at Facebook. They're tweeting. They're sending Twitter feeds. They're doing all kinds of different things, and they get so distracted all of a sudden, especially in rural Minnesota, where they're driving 65 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour, and they're getting lulled to sleep by the cornfields and everything else. All of a sudden there's a construction zone there, and they're not ready for it. And we believe strongly that speed kills. Speed kills and distracted driving kills. And we've been fortunate enough, again, since I was 10 years old, not to have had a death in our work zone, although, as we heard earlier, testimony, it's very present and a very significant issue. Dunick Incorporated supports this legislation wholeheartedly, and we believe it will go a long ways in helping us fulfill our motto of safety brings you home. It is this legislation, as sitting as the current chair for the AGC of Minnesota, this legislation is the AGC of Minnesota's top legislative priority in 2014. It is key for us, and a lot has been done, and we're grateful for that. More needs to be done. More things can be put into place, more safeguards to make sure that this work environment is a safe environment for these employees. So thank you, Madam Chairman and committee members, for your time this afternoon.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein,
thanks.
You join
us? Just quickly, I strongly support this one as well. And you know, Mr. Dunick, when you're talking about people Facebooking and online, you know, that's already illegal, and we just need better enforcement of this. That's, you know, we passed a no texting while driving bill. You know, I think Governor Pawlenty signed the larger legislation that was contained in. And, you know, so just that piece of it, we just have to enforce it. That's work zones. That's across the board. You cannot text. You cannot use any kind of electronic device that's distracting you, you know, whether it's the computer or whatever. That's already on the books. So we just have to, and maybe we ought to have a discussion, Mr. Chair, about this, you know, the enforcement of those laws. But obviously it has to be expanded. Shouldn't be talking on the cell phone in a work zone or anywhere else, but, you know, but I just wanted to let you know and let the committee know that, that we did pass bipartisanly a ban on texting while driving. We were the third state, and now I think a lot of the states have it. I don't know what the number's up to now.
Madam Chair, how about speeding and cell phones? We have more stuff.
I think tweeting's incorporated, Mr. Chair, in the already on the books. So.
Thank you.
I know you tweet a lot.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to pursue again this issue of when a work zone has reduced speeds and when it doesn't. So, Mr. Prinsberg, Mr. Dunnick, if you've got a project on Highway 55, when do you decide to get permission from MnDOT to lower the speed?
In almost every single case, the speed zones within the safety or within the work construction zone is dictated by the plans and specifications. So if the highway is a 65-mile-an-hour speed limit, there will be a tab within the plans and the proposal that basically say the detour signing, not detour signing, but the work zone signing is reduced to X miles per hour. It's also called the MUTCD, which is a manual of uniform traffic control. It's a book that's published by MnDOT every single year, and that's what the contractor adheres to.
Madam Chair and Mr. Dunnick, what instances then would the work plan say that no reduced speeds are necessary? There really are some situations?
Yeah, I would imagine. And again, we work mostly in rural Minnesota, but I know that there's probably some other people in the room that can testify to this, that when they put the Jersey barrier up, the concrete barriers that delineate traffic and move them over, if the workers have that type of protection in place, which is cost prohibitive in rural settings, but if they can put that Jersey barrier in place, then that will protect, and a lot of times they'll leave the speed limit as posted.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Next testifier, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is David Debevic. I work for Ewan Brothers Construction. Ewan Brothers began in 1920, and we've grown to be a road construction builder in northern and southern Minnesota with a workforce of up to 275 folks. And we primarily, like Dunnick, are also a paving contractor and work in the rural areas of Minnesota. And just so you're familiar with, I think we've all seen paving operations, but you have a hot mix plant. You mix some hot mix and you bring it out to a job. We primarily use a belly dump to dump a windrow of asphalt, and it's picked up by a pickup machine, dumped into a paver, put into a nice even lift, and then it's rolled out by our asphalt rollers. Raked out sometimes, you know, by the crew, that type of thing. These operations move at the pace of a walk, basically, down the road. So that traffic, that work zone is always moving with the operations. So offers us another challenge of protecting our workers. And a lot of times there isn't positive protection for a paving operation like Jersey barriers. We just have a cone basically between, or a barrel if you're lucky, between that paving operation and the traffic that's whizzing by. So I can tell you, for being safety director for a construction company for 12 years and facilitating safety committee meetings for 12 years, that our number one issue that our workers bring to us as far as a hazard on a job site is traffic. And the speed of the traffic and distracted drivers, and what can we do as a company, as a committee, as an industry, as a state to help protect our workers. And we need more tools in the toolbox to do that. And that's what we're here today to ask of you. This past season, I got a phone call from one of our superintendents, and Admittedly, they rarely call me to tell me how good things are going, but this call was especially upsetting because he was calling to let me know that one of our flaggers had been hit by a car. And luckily, he wasn't seriously injured or worse. And, you know, good hockey player from Northern Minnesota. He just had some bruising and was able to be evaluated and go home. So we feel very fortunate, but this, among other incidents that we've had over the years, where fighters have had to jump out of the way of traffic, and we've had, you know, drivers that are texting that just do not stop at the flagger because they're distracted by their cell phones. And ultimately on the job sites, you know, the safety unfortunately is controlled by the individual drivers, and they're either distracted or otherwise occupied or impaired. And we need some tools to help us get these drivers to respect our workers and our work zones. This past season, I was down on Highway 65 in southern Minnesota, near Glenville, a paving operation going to the Iowa border. And I checked on that operation. I continued south on 65 into Iowa, where we have a quarry. And I knew when I got to Iowa that there was a sign, "Welcome to Iowa," quickly followed by a sign that said, "Work zones, $1,000 max fine for speeding. Other fines double." And I thought to myself, you know, I was putting their foot forward here and saying that they're serious about protecting their workers and reducing speeding in work zones. And I think that with your help today, we can help Minnesota to bring it to that level. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Neuberger, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. As I'm listening to all of this, I want to say I'm sorry for your loss. And I understand the environment from a personal experience ongoing. The job that the highway workers do is terrifying at times. But with that said, as I'm thinking and processing this through, most of us have these GPS devices in our cars, tell us how to get from point A to point B because no one reads a map anymore. Some folks have them built in right into their cars. Some of us do. Oftentimes people use them on their smartphones, so they have their smartphone dialed up telling them where to go. So how would this proposal, this concept, this bill, affect the use of smartphone applications for navigational devices? Or if you want to take it one step farther, if you've got a built-in navigation device in your car, will you be required to turn that off in a work zone? Would this be considered, in my opinion, I would see this as an equal distraction, because you have this computer program talking to you and taking your eyes off the road onto the screen. So work me through this and tell me, how does that fit into this equation? Thank you.
A lot of things are
Representative Verhart.
Madam Chair, you know, if you're eating McDonald's that you just picked up and you reach down for the french fries, that kind of stuff is, we got a lot of things. But I suppose we can't do everything, so we're going to do the things which appear to be direct causes that we might. Can't tell a guy not to buy a hamburger and eat it, I suppose, or we can say don't use. In fact, I think the Highway Patrol would have a hard time figuring out that one, seeing somebody in motion with their hamburger rather than with their cell phone. So I suppose you can't get everything. We're trying to move it forward. If we get cell phones this year, next year, hamburgers.
I suppose that'll do.
Okay. Thank you. There's one more testifier.
Hi, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Todd Callahan. I'm with PCI Roads. We are a concrete provider, contractor. We do paving, bridge repair, CPR, which is concrete pavement rehabilitation, Jersey barriers, a wide variety. We are located in St. Michael, Minnesota. We employ approximately 500 people. We've been in business since the early 70s. I myself have been there 27 plus years. You could say that I pretty much grew up on the roads. Started as right out of high school. Seen numerous accounts of close calls, which they don't necessarily get recorded, tracked. You just kind of brush them off and say, wow, what can I learn from that situation? Over the years, of course, the speed limits have been raised. Drivers are more comfortable driving in work zones. There are a lot more of them now than there was 25 years ago. I think people get comfortable, complacent with it. And the next thing you know is that just the speeds start going up and up and up. The distractive driving is definitely a problem. I do believe with the enhanced fine, it gets people's attention back to paying attention to their speed. I myself would definitely take a distracted driver at 30 miles an hour rather than at 80. And like I said, over the countless years of being on the road, there's been multiple incidents. Last year alone, I think we can record 4 or 5 of them. One of our subcontractors was struck by a car. We don't know if it was inattentive driving or what. He suddenly swerved into our work zone, hit a couple pieces of equipment, veered off of them, struck the employee, and then fled the scene. And apparently they still have not tracked him down to this day. So I think that any tool that construction workers, the state, any tool that we can help is a positive thing on everybody. The traveling public, the workers that are out there, it is a very, very dangerous environment when you're working on the edge of the road within inches of cars going 60 miles an hour. It becomes quite frightening at times. And now these days and age, everything is so fast-tracked, schedules are so tight, it seems like everything is about the traveling public. We need to concentrate on the workers, I do believe. And by raising the fine here, I think that gets everybody's focus back on their speed, which definitely would help.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Questions at this point? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I look at the bill and wonder why why don't we have the fine at 500 or 1,000? Why don't we say that in a work zone we must reduce the speed? And why don't we say that the reduced speed is 25 miles less than the predominant speed? To me, we're addressing the wrong issue. We're looking for a scapegoat, and the real things at work we're not doing. I don't get it. Am I off here, or is there an explanation?
Well, Madam Chair, there is some opposing ideas to reducing speed from MnDOT. And I'm sure that at one time or another, if you propose something such as you did, you'd hear from them. And I think that they have reasons that they do not care to reduce speed too much, mobility being one of them. Reducing speed too much also is a hazard, because you come up to the reduced speed and we've got people that are very slow, and so you got people going too fast from 70 to 30, for instance, would cause a mess, or whatever their parameters are. So there are a number of reasons that we haven't gone beyond, and I don't have those in my head. I think council's gone home, so they're up here. You could probably explain what the possible speed reductions are under current law if you wanted to. If you wanted to hear that.
Well, I'm reading them here, Madam Chair. And
I mean, current law is what we're
following. Okay.
Mr. Hurst.
Would you like to hear those?
Well, Representative Earhart, if we could hear an explanation of why, it seems like there are easier solutions than what we're trying to do here.
Question. Okay, do we want Mr. Werke before Mr. Hurst? Okay, Mr. Werke, go ahead.
Madam Chair, again, Tim Werke from the Associated General Contractors. Representative, I'm not going to speak at all for the department other than to add some context to our group in the discussions. In the setting of speed limits was discussed at length and in great detail. It's a complex issue. It has many facets and oftentimes repercussions that can be more adverse than leaving speed limits set at the higher speed level. One of the reasons we did not delve into that is because of that complexity, because of our desire to want to get something of consequence accomplished this legislative session. This is not an issue from our group's perspective that's we're going to finish and go away. We're going to continue to work on these things. But the establishing of work zone speed limits, it has a lot of art into it and a lot of science. And I don't want to understate, there were folks that aggressively believe that speed limits should be lowered. Mm-hmm. And there are others that have a differing opinion about that for very valid reasons as well. But the reason you see the fine structure addressed in this bill is the fact that we felt that that's something we all agreed on, was that the fine has lost, or that the legend on the sign in a work zone that says fines double has lost its attention, its ability to affect change behavior, and that we needed to go to something that was a much more directly stated and clearly stated high-level fine as a starting point.
Thank you. Mr. Burrs, do you want to add anything to that? Okay. He doesn't. Are there any other questions from the people currently at the table? Okay. Then we have one more person to testify on this bill. Mr. Neumeister.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. My comments are based on about the speed camera proposal. Again, it's for informational purposes that you're here, and I'm sure there'll be more discussion possibly if this proposal goes ahead. As many of you know, my background is such that I've done a lot of work on privacy, civil liberties, open government, and all that for a long period of time. And ever since the idea of automated law enforcement cameras have been here in Minnesota, I've been at the front gate, making my comments known and persisting constantly with those views. The proposal before you in the Delete Everything bill is not like the photocop that you discussed last session. It's not like in previous. It's very specific. But still, as I mentioned to a legislator going down the hallway, it's sort of like the camel's nose under the tent. And a lot of people, some people will say, well, Rich, slippery slope doesn't work with me. But when you've been here as long as I have, over the decades, when we talk about technology and privacy and the way technology moves, it is true. The slippery slope, the camel's nose under the tent begins to happen. So when there's discussion and there's the possibility of such things of this type of technology may come into play because safety is involved, and you know it's an important thing to discuss those things. And if you're going to go forward with it, I would like to make some suggestions that should be as part of the language. First of all, this is a demonstration project. And I've seen pilot projects language put into bills before. I want to make it very clear that it should be, and I suggest to you, sunset. All the language that's developed for the pilot project be sunset when it defines all those automated camera and all that. So whatever, how long, just make sure it's not part of any statute. It's a pilot project. Number two is that speed cameras is much different than red light cameras. Speed cameras, now a number of states have done some things. Some of those states are the state of Washington, which did a two-year study like you did. Maryland, which is one of the big people doing these, you know, the big states doing it in mass. And Pennsylvania, and now Minnesota. And I'm sure there's others, to where local jurisdictions, where the legislature has given the ability for local jurisdictions to do some things. Now let me just tell you, I don't think this should be done as a gotcha kind of thing. And it should not be done for revenue. If the basic thing is for public safety and for safety of the drivers and also the people that are doing the work things, these are some suggested things that some other states have done, particularly Maryland, who has done this, and they're doing it in real time past their experimental study. So if you're going to do this pilot study, let's take a look at what it would be like if you're going to adopt it. In Maryland, one of the things they do, the ticket doesn't go out unless it's done if you go 12 miles over the speed limit. Number two is what they do is they have various signs and things like that. And I think we need to do a little bit more of that than what is the proposal here to make it very clear, hey, you're entering one of the five zones that's being proposed. Three weeks before the implementation of this safety thing or whatever, or automated enforcement, they do the PR thing. Maryland has even their own website that talks about and all kinds of questions like that. The other kind of things is that one of the two states that I recently saw, or the three states, talks about it's basically treated as a parking ticket. One of the other things that was kind of interesting, Maryland, you can go on their website, you can see, like, at one spot for a whole year, 72,000 tickets were issued. Now, I don't know what their threshold is. I couldn't find in detail on that. But they charge $40 a crack. And between 2009, 2011, what they did, from the figures that I saw, they had 769,000 citations, and over $25 million was raised. Now, I don't know what the budget projections are for this particular, you know, in terms of the cameras aspect of it, but one of the things, all the issues that you heard about before, when it comes to photocop, also will deal with this experimental deal. So do you show the face or not? The whole issue of the data. As you may know, there was the pilot project on the revenue mileage where $7 million is spent of bond money. Well, how many biennials ago they finally came up with it? What do you do with all the data? So, I'm just trying to make, you know, some just general comments. These are important things to talk about, and particularly when technology speeds fast. You in the body of the House of Reps, you've dealt with license plate readers. In the body of the House of Reps, you've dealt with license plate readers. One of the questions I ask, will these cameras, whoever gets the contract, it's very easy to put LPR scanning technology in a camera. So it could do a dual purpose. I mean, there's been discussion of it. You know, I don't every day look for the, you know, unless the issue starts to be discussed. But it's been talked about. We've already heard about facial recognition, where it's starting to be paired up with cameras and all that. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I oppose this philosophically. But if you're going to do it for a two-year study, you just need some of the things that I suggest, which I think, if you want to do something, I mean, do it based on safety, not driven by a cash cow. Madam Chair, those are my comments.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none.
Thank
Are there any comments from the audience? Seeing none. Representative Earhart, do you have anything to finish off?
I don't, Madam Chair. Just I want to thank the testifiers that came to support this, and we'll be asking them to come back on whatever day we convene officially to address this again. And it's not been easy for the direct participants, the folks that were directly affected by this, but they managed to break through, and I thank them for that. And just again, I go back to orange cones, no phones, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next meeting will be on February 26th at 2:15, and right now it's scheduled to be in room 10. And again, thank you all for coming. The meeting stands adjourned.